two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us on Archetypes, a dynamic podcast hosted by Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, as she digs into the labels that try to hold women back. In each intimate and candid conversation, Meghan is joined by guests like Serena Williams, Mariah Carey, Paris Hilton, Issa Rae, and Trevor Noah as they delve into the roots of countless common descriptors of women, like diva, crazy, dumb blonde, and the B word, and redefine and reclaim each identity along the way. The complete season of Archetypes is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
It's literally birthed out of the shutdown, and which is to say that my tour is on hold. For now, the book was pushed a month. Like everything, obviously, everyone's experiencing this sort of existential pause and literal pause.
Welcome to In the Bubble. This is Andy Slavitt. And no co-host, Mike Birbiglia is on the show today. And you might ask, why are you having Mike Birbiglia on the show? He's not a scientist. He's a funny person. And the truth is, we've had a lot of not so funny stuff going on. And I thought it would be nice to get a funny person take on things who spends his time like everybody else, very disrupted. You know, he's a road comedian. I will admit, I think he's great. I find his comedy very funny. And I also know that we've done a lot of episodes recently, and we'll do some episodes recently, which have a lot of serious components to them. And so I hope you enjoy it. I will say that it's been a weird week. It's been weird in that the presidential election has definitely altered the way this pandemic is being handled. Everything now is coming through the lens of this presidential election, including recent announcements by the FDA and the CDC, which are, to people who are, I think, maybe close to those agencies and close to the work that gets done there, quite surprising, because they are being manipulated, clearly, for political gains. And it's just a strange place to be. And I know it causes all of you to say, well, who do I trust? Can I trust this? Can I trust things? So we had an episode on the CDC with Tom Frieden. We are going to have an episode on the FDA with two former FDA commissioners. We are just going to go at it. We are just going to try to help you sort this stuff out. We're going to try to help people understand how to think about these things, what to believe, what not. And we're just going to plow through it. We don't give up. You know, we don't sit here and say, things are so bad or so strange that we're going to quit. We're not. You just keep going. And I think that's got to be our philosophy, is to just take these things head on. We'll run into barriers. We'll run into weird things. We'll run into setbacks. And I'm confident if we just keep plowing, we'll get to the other side of this. I really do believe it. And I know it's really hard. So that's really my message today. We're going to have a couple of interesting announcements in the next week or so, but I'm not going to spoil them here, but we will be talking about them soon enough. And now we'll get to Mike Birbiglia. It's probably a little bit of the long side because we kind of went on and on and on. Just stop listening anytime, you know, just pause it. You can have another meal, come back, listen, have another meal. No, it's really not that long, but we did have fun. And here's Mike. Let's ring him up.
See how this does. Here we go.
There you are.
It's all right. All right?
Yeah.
So, I'm recording on GarageBand on my end. Are you recording on your end too? Because we should have this laid down on vinyl if we can.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to preface by saying that if people are listening to this, that we will convey vital information also. So like if you're listening and you're like, why is Mike Birbiglia on this? This is a waste of my time. Andy's supposed to be giving me vital information. Like we'll get to that too. And I will try to act as the listener and ask appropriate questions that they might be thinking.
So we were thinking we'd put Mike Birbiglia, PhD, on the Apple podcast. And so people are like, oh, I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, sure.
Actually, a good place to start is I've been a total failure in interviewing funny people.
Okay.
I mean, a total failure. So I had Tina Fey on, and I thought my job was to try to be funnier than her.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's dumb. So you have funny people on. You're like one of the funniest people I know. How do I make sure that I don't screw this up?
I think that the best that either of us could do is some variation on that I ask you questions that are on the listener's mind right now, and you answer them honestly. And if we find humor along the way, we do. And if we don't, we don't.
But what if I try to be funny?
You can be funny. You are very funny sometimes on Twitter.
No, that's my medium. I mean,
clearly.
Constrict me to like a couple of, I don't know what it is.
Health and Twitter Services, I believe, is your former position in the White House.
If they would have never invented Twitter, I probably would be like wandering around in the park.
It's your jam.
It's my jam. It's what I do. Yeah. It doesn't pay. My wife says that all the time. I'm like, hey, I got another 1,000 followers. She's like, what does it pay? Does it pay anymore? No.
Well, I overheard your coworkers talking before we started about people. You're getting flooded with questions about testing. And that would be my number one question. It's because you had this whole tweet storm last week that Jen and I were really excited about. We're like, Andy's optimistic for once. Andy's optimistic about testing. And we're like, and Andy, he hates everything. He's angry all the time. And then it's like, oh, Andy's optimistic. Andy's optimistic. It's all going to happen now. And right. And then no follow-up.
Yeah. Well, and then last night, I was just outrageous, like tweeting ridiculous GIFs. So, you know, I hope people aren't taking their cues from me. So we worked long and hard on a bunch of stuff that, like, goes on in the background when all of us are like dealing with all the bad news. There is work going on. And like some of this stuff, and I don't give myself credit for this, but that I was tangentially involved in with this NBA working on creating this $5 open source test.
Yeah.
And my thing is like, I'm like, if you're going to do something and you're trying to make money at it, you go do that on your own.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do something and you're going to give it away, not make money at it, and try to do something that changes things, I'm in. I'll give you all the time in the world. And there's an array of tests coming that are different than the kind we have, because the kind we have, like, they're expensive and they take a long time. So you go, okay, there's a reason you might want it a test that's expensive and very accurate.
Yeah. But I just did the nose one today. Actually, I did a drive-through nose one today.
Self-inflicted?
No. I drove through.
You feeling sick?
I just said based on exposure. I don't know.
What are you doing? How are you getting exposed?
I don't know.
What are you exposing yourself to?
I don't know. Maybe I'll get arrested. But I was just like, I want to get one. I want to know what this thing is.
All right. So you use someone else's Q-tip. I want you to know that.
There's not that many.
Yeah. There's not that many.
No way.
Someone else is not going to get the Q-tip because you frivolously went through the drive-thru.
Oh, man. Now I feel terrible.
Well, I mean, I always feel terrible when I go through drive-thru also because I'm like, I always order shit that I should never eat when I go through the drive-thru. That's my dad joke. See, it's my dad joke. See, I told you, I tried to be funny.
Well, you know John Mulaney's joke about the drive-thru. Do you ever hear that one?
What? No.
About how his dad, the funniest joke is that his dad, when they were kids, his dad would be like, the kids would be like, we want to go to McDonald's. We want to go to McDonald's. And he's like, no. And finally, he pulls over at McDonald's and he goes to the drive-thru. And they're like, yeah. And they're all cheering, like, yeah, McDonald's. And then he goes, we'll have one black coffee. And then he takes the one black coffee and drives away. And I just love that story. I'm totally botching it, but it's a good story.
No, I can hear it in his voice. You guys just did something together, I saw.
We did an outdoor thing, yeah.
Like a drive-in movie for like...
That kind of thing in Jersey, yeah.
How'd that go?
I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, the outdoor stuff, I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel like if we're distancing outdoors, it doesn't worry me as much. But of course, I'm not a scientist.
So I met with this woman yesterday. I'm not allowed to say her name, but it rhymes with works. And she works in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
But I'm not allowed to say because it was a confidential meeting.
Okay.
But she works out of the White House. Her name is Dr. And it rhymes with works.
I got it.
All right, good.
Okay. I got it the first time, but I was playing it cool, Andy.
Okay, all right. I knew the audience got it. I was, but you had this look on your, you had this look on your face, like Spurks, Merks, Dirks, Irks, Furks. I'm like, no, go back. It's the beginning.
Yeah.
So she was like giving the formula for like what works and what doesn't work, and. She was
which of course rhymes with her name.
Oh yeah, exactly. Damn. See, this is good. This is good.
She was telling you what burks and what doesn't burk.
That's right. Anyway, she's saying like 100%.
By the way, the listeners are like, get to the information. We need vital information to live.
What they want to know is the argument that I got and. Okay. Theoretically, with her, but I can't say.
So you're not going to divulge what you found out yesterday?
Unless you drag it out of me, but...
But does it pertain to this outdoor show? Yeah,
that part I can tell you, because it theoretically happened and theoretically didn't happen, so I can tell you that.
Okay, sure.
She said 100% indoor and outdoor masks. 100% indoor and outdoor masks, mandatory. She said that's what we did in Arizona.
Yeah.
And that worked. That burked. So I was like, sure. I had not heard that before. So I'm texting my wife, Lana, and I'm like, masks outdoors 100% of the time. So,
wow.
Anyway, her boss, meanwhile, doesn't seem to be at the same school, which is part of what we were having arguments about. Is a lot of the things that she was professing to say, I'm like, well, how come if I go to the CDC website or the FDA or whatever, you got people who are saying the opposite, like on Twitter, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, yes. So my question is, this open sourcing of the saliva test, when can you get one of those to Mike Birbiglia?
Never. It's just theoretical. It's just theoretical.
When does it get to the comedians is what I'm saying.
Yeah, right. You're after the healthcare workers. You're after the people who do groceries.
And the basketball players.
You're after the basketball players, for sure.
Have you seen me play basketball, though? Here's how good I am at basketball. First competitive game of basketball I ever played. I had been playing in my hoop in front of my house for years, and I thought that I was going to be the next Larry Bird. I really thought, like, I'm phenomenal at this. Wait till people see me. I go out to play with Matt Beaton and Michael Cavanaugh at Dean Park. Someone passes me the ball. I shoot the ball. The ball does not reach the height of the hoop or the distance between me and the hoop. It looked like I was playing another sport altogether, like volleyball.
You know why?
Why?
Because it's different than Nerf. The Nerf throws you off. It feels heavy. So when you throw the basketball, you're like, wow, this feels different.
No, it wasn't a Nerf. I was playing with a real ball. It's just that when you play solo basketball for years and years and you have no... competitors, you just have no sense of what it's going to be like.
So we had Steve Kerr on the show.
Yeah, that's right. He's pretty good, right?
He's made more three-pointers in his career than I have.
Me too, same. Probably both of us combined.
Now, see, you're right. We are bringing the vital information to people. These are facts that people would not.
These are statistics.
It's just the stats. It's the data. It's the data. So the test, we're now basically going to labs and hospitals. I say we, but it's really other people. And saying, here is this test. We can sign off on it. You don't need to go to the FDA to be able to sell it. And we just need to make sure you sign up for a certain volume, and we don't want you to overcharge for it. Because a commercial lab would come in and say, oh, a free test. Great. I'm still going to charge $150 for it. So we're like, no, that doesn't work.
Oh, I've been to the hospital. Yeah.
Yeah. So in California, you're in California, correct?
No, New York.
You're in New York. Okay. Well, hey, So we're going to, New York's going to be one of the first cities
Fantastic.
That's going to have this live test. There's going to be a logistics group that's, I think, agreeing to help. And they're called, I won't say what they're called, but it rhymes with Shmamazon.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yep. And they believe it or not, they have their own labs and they have their own logistics.
Wow.
And so, you know, people are like, well, wait a minute. This is open source. How are you going to allow someone like Shmamazon to make money? And I'm like, they hit a low price, they could do it cheaply. So then the contract came back and we asked them, for every test you do that you get paid, which is like, you know, five, 10, whatever dollars they're going to charge for it, will you do one for free in the community?
That's great.
So we're waiting to hear that. So you might want to, if you want to get on your Amazon, whatever Amazon device you have, and kind of vote for it.
Okay, sure. But I want to know, like, what kind of timeline are we looking at for those saliva tests?
Oh, years. No.
Are you serious?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, look, the idea is, look, let me take a step back and make an acutely political point in a very clever way. If the government would have gotten, if the federal government would have stayed focused on this in April and May, instead of saying, hey, we beat this thing, these tests would have been ready for school.
Oh, yeah.
And what you really want are these tests, like, available in August, September, so that you can go, okay, because the most important thing about a test is actually how frequently you take it. Frequency is more important than accuracy, because think about it. If you have a $5 test that's 75% accurate, and you take it three times for $15, you're pretty confident you know what you're doing, versus a test that's $100,
sure,
right? That's 90% accurate.
Sure.
And it's only a point in time thing, so you got to keep taking it every day. Or every other day, or every few days as an entrance. So turns out that cadence and frequency is important. And we would have had those available at schools, at universities, in time to open. As it is now, my hope is that both the saliva direct tests and other saliva tests, because again, I don't really have a horse in this race. I hope there's thousands of them. Doesn't have to be this one, are ready for schools as they begin the new year and are available, you know, in communities, you know, before then.
You're saying 2 weeks from now?
No, I'm saying that the next semester.
Oh,
they got to get revved up. There's a couple schools that have them. There's a couple schools that have them. University of Illinois uses saliva test.
Wow.
For 50,000 students on the first day. So some, it's already getting out there.
Oh, wow. That's good to hear.
If I were in this administration, I would say, okay, just decide what's more important. Then what's the most important thing you want to solve? And just solve that. So if schools are more important than, say, I don't know, bars or comedians.
Sure. Comedians are important. Yep.
Then I'd go, let's line up our testing resources. Let's get the right type of tests and let's get schools going. Instead, they're kind of like, hey, the market will do what it will do. People could charge whatever they want. And they've kind of sat back and so nothing happens. And in Korea, they basically bought all this stuff up, said, here's the price we're paying, and got it all built. We're just kind of like, you know. And then the woman yesterday told me, she bragged to me that we use 75% of the world's testing supply. And in other words, look how good we are. We're capturing all of the world's testing supply. Meanwhile, I'm freaking horrified. I'm like, that's not good.
Andy, what's the silver lining in all this? I think I'm speaking for the listener when I say, when does this get better? I mean, I think, tell me if I'm crazy. On my worst days, I think he wins re-election. The virus is literally never dealt with. It exists for the next 3 or 4 years.
That's the silver lining?
No. No, that's, I'm asking you to give me the silver lining because I'm telling you what my doomsday scenario is.
Oh, right.
I feel like if he wins, right, if he loses re-election, it becomes a thing where, okay, in January, at least, we'll have someone who's reasonable. He'll come in with a plan, a testing plan. The virus won't go away, but at least it'll be acknowledged as a problem. If this guy wins re-election, like, it honestly feels like we may never truly plateau.
Yeah. So here's the silver lining. And it'll make you crazy, Mike. Silver lining isn't actually that hard. It really isn't. Countries all around the world have figured it out. And it's like, do what they did, right? I mean, if you had four words, do what they did. Do what they did.
Yeah.
And like, what we understand today, and we didn't understand this earlier, before we thought it transferred on surfaces, and we're like, oh my God, we'd never touch anything, we'd wear gloves. Now we know That's not it. It's we can't breathe near one another. Like, yeah. It's as simple as that.
Droplets.
Yeah. So, fine. Can we train ourselves not to go to places indoors where a lot of people are breathing near one another for a little while? You can do that.
Andy, the thing is, like, I just love breathing near people.
Yeah, well, people don't love that about you. I mean, there's a lot of things people like about you.
No, that's what people like most about me. That's my appeal. My appeal actually is how much I breathe on people and how much they breathe on me.
No, your appeal is how much you like to breathe on people. That's different. They like the fact that you want
to. Well, laughter is the best medicine unless it's droplets, and then it's the worst medicine.
Droplets are, that's good. Laughter is the best medicine unless it's droplets. That could be a name of your new comedy record. And now for something we like to call advertising.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between. Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us. So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
So I've had like the last three or four interviews in a row that I've done on the show have been really deep and heavy. Like we just did one on long haulers with like, these are people that like don't shake COVID and it's going to play in a week or two.
Oh,
and
gosh.
There wasn't a comic moment on that whole episode. I mean, it was surprisingly few laughs.
Well, I'll point out to the listeners, I'm Mike Birbiglia, I'm a comedian. We goof around a little bit today. I'm not flippant about the entire situation. I'm hyper aware. That's why I listen to the show. But when I'm making jokes, I'm not making jokes at the expense of people who are struggling.
I appreciate you saying that. And people do, like, they need an outlet. Like, one of the premises of the show at the beginning was we could still laugh. Let's take a year and a half off from laughing. You can't laugh as long as, I mean, if you couldn't laugh as long as people were sick or bad things were happening to people, that would be, like, the wrong price to pay. Now, if I get sick, I don't want you laughing. I think then we should be more serious.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody.
I wouldn't make a joke about that.
But if you're sick...
That's pretty funny. Yeah, yeah.
It's not unfunny. It's not unfunny. I mean, the fact that you went to get your thing, you tested today. I made light of that, even though you have every right to do that. What are you drinking?
Iced coffee. Is that right?
It's just kind of viscousy looking. I see it. Yeah. Very good. I didn't know if it was some like superpower energy.
It's getting me through these times, Andy. What gets you through these times?
Oh, coffee for sure.
Coffee?
Coffee for sure. No question. The smell of coffee. By the way, I realized that for the beginning of this thing, I was eating like a 15-year-old boy and drinking like a 70-year-old man.
Yeah.
I'm like eating quesadillas and then drinking like old fashioned.
How many variations on bread and cheese can you put together in a week? Yeah,
exactly. I was like, why not? And then yesterday when I went to see, Dr.
Clerks,
I had to put on real clothes without elastic.
That's a big moment.
Yeah, for the first time since March. You know, there's a reason why people don't do that because I had my feedback loop had kind of disappeared a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew I'd put on a couple pounds, but I was not putting on clothes every day.
Yeah.
Except, you know, when I go on TV, it's easy because I got my shorts on, I put on a dress shirt, put on my jacket, but I'm not really wearing a suit.
Yeah, yeah. Dress shirt goes a long way to disguise the whole thing. Upper torso, dress shirt, can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Can't lose.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Even look at this, the frame right here. You're looking at me. I look fantastic.
Yeah. You do look good.
Down here, disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm telling you a horrible scenario, which is he gets reelected and then he doesn't address the pandemic, which he hasn't. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you know better than I do. It's almost like he's pretended it just doesn't exist and maybe it'll go away. He's like a toddler.
Yeah, right. He tweeted yesterday that only 9,000 people have died, or retweeted.
Wow, that's really something.
Yeah.
Even if that were the case, by the way, that's 3 9/11s. Like, it's horrible.
No, it's horrible.
Even if his conspiracy theory were true, that would be bad.
Right.
That was what I was saying on my podcast the other day with Ronnie Chang, which is... the problem, because I said to Ronnie, I go, you've lived in New Hampshire, New York, Singapore, Malaysia, and Australia. And what's the thing that people have in common in all those places? Ronnie Chang from The Daily Show. And he said, there's conspiracy theorist whack jobs everywhere. And he's like, we just need them to all, but they never meet. He's like, we need them to at some point meet and destroy each other. but he said there's idiots everywhere. And then the other thing he said that was fascinating and worrisome is he said he was talking to his mom. And when he was growing up and he said he was going to go to America, everyone said, oh, America's a no-brainer. America's, you know, land of opportunity. And now... he's living in Australia, but he's planning to come back early in the new year to work on The Daily Show. And his mom goes, why would you go back to America? America's a disaster. And that's the response he's getting from people in his circles. And that's I find that to be extraordinarily worrisome for the future of our country.
So look, Trump could win. No question about it. You know, I try not to make political statements on this show, but I would be worried about our democracy. I mean, even more so than I would be about, because like the pandemic will, scientists, no matter what Trump does, you know, even no matter how badly he screws it up in the meantime, and we'll lose lots and lots more people than we should, you know, the pandemic will end because it will play itself out, and it will play itself out with way too much death, but the democracy could be over forever.
Yeah.
Forever. And that's crazy. You know what you made me think, by the way, of something that Chris Hayes said, which I thought was really clever. He said, can you imagine, like, if your response every time somebody died was like, well, 60,000 people died from the flu.
Oh, I know.
So it's like, can you imagine, like, at 9/11, if, like, the plane flew in and people are like, yeah, it's only 3,000 people. 60,000 people died from the flu.
Yeah. 60,000 right. From the flu.
Every time anything bad happens, there's a school shooting today, but 60,000 people died from the flu.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. People die in car accidents every day.
You know, I hate to sound like it's all binary on the election, but I will say this about Biden. I do think he's built for moments like these.
Sure. And I agree with that. I mean, well, you'd know more than me, but from afar, I would say that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Why do you say that, by the way? What gives you that?
My take on Biden is he's so old. He clearly doesn't want to be president. Like, like if he's willing to do it, he's going to die. He's going to die in like 5 years. I mean, look, I don't know if he's going to die, but he might. And like his last thing that he wants to do is do the hardest job on the planet and literally have no glory years after that. Like, I'm like, you know what? I know he doesn't have a perfect record, but he's also like 1,000 years old. And I wouldn't have a great record either if I was 1,000 years old. And he's clearly doing it for the right reasons because he's 1,000 years old.
That's a pretty good take.
Thanks, man. I mean, I don't know if I should go. I mean, I'm going wide with it by saying it on here. I don't know if I should say it more often, but I really feel strongly about it. Like, whenever people go after him, I'm like, come on. He's about to, if he wins, he's about to spend like the final 5 or 6 years of his life doing the hardest job on the planet. Can you imagine? I could not imagine that. I would be like, get me to Palm Springs. I want to go swimming. I want to do some laps. I want to jump off a diving board.
Yeah. So did you watch any of the Republican convention?
I mean, I don't watch television, but I listen to excerpts, and then on Twitter sometimes people show stuff. And
what was your perception?
I mean, my perception is like it reminds me of North Korea, where you see those the sort of false. I'm trying to think of the movie, the North Korean movie, where the government sort of shows you the nice parts of town, and they don't show you all the terrible things. And it's to me, that's what the Republican convention was in a nutshell. It was like, no, things are good here. America's great. You know, let's keep it going. And it showed complete and total ignorance of reality. And I mean, if that's going to resonate with people, I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm speechless. I think that's why Jim Gaffigan spoke out the other night on Twitter, because...
Wait, so tell me what he said, because I got a lot of people who referred to that to me.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. It trended on the night of the RNC, which is pretty significant. So Gaffigan texted me, and because I retweeted his thing and said I supported him, and he texted me and said, thanks for supporting me. He goes... He said the reason why I think I went off on Twitter is that I was watching RNC and I thought, oh my God, he's just lying. And he's so good at lying. He doesn't have any tells that he's lying.
Right.
And I think that that's what's most worrisome about the RNC is that if they can cobble together 43-44% of people to believe the lies of the RNC, maybe they could take the Electoral College.
I think a lot of the things that they're, like when they're saying, when he says go to school, like we want open schools, Democrats don't. We're law and order, Democrats don't. We're saying we're pro-vaccine, even though it's not ready, Democrats don't. He traps the other side into taking this a position that sounds crazy if you don't dig. And this whole idea where he signed these $1,200 checks, like if he wins the election, it'll probably be because, and like it'll be all because of things that like you and I would never talk about or think about, but like he signed these $1,200 checks, and the guy who's in charge of Hispanic outreach for Biden told me that he has a Biden sticker on his car, and he drove through a car wash, and the guy who did the car wash is also a Hispanic working class guy, said, I see you're voting for Joe Biden. And he said, yes. And he goes, well, I'm not. I'm voting for Donald Trump. And he said, why? He said, he sent me a $1,200 check.
Wow.
And I was like, that was kind of an interesting moment for me because I was like, oh.
Wow.
But I think that registers.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what's tough is like, you know, the reason I relate to Gaffigan so much is that he and I are both sort of road comics. I mean, people try to pigeonhole me on Twitter as like Hollywood elite or whatever. It's like, I've never lived in Hollywood. I don't work in Hollywood. I'm like a road comic, you know, I did this show on Broadway or whatever. I've made some movies, but they're independent movies I shot in New York. And I play all 50 states, you know, I play everywhere. And I think the thing that really struck me the most in 2016 when he was running and then when he gave the American Carnage speech that everyone always references.
Yeah.
Is that having spent all this time in the country over the years, I get what he means. I get what he's appealing to. I mean, a lot of these post-industrial towns, they do feel like they've been forgotten by the federal government, and it's frustrating. And so it is hard to take the contrarian position to that, to say like, okay, well, he's wrong about that. It's like, well, he's not completely wrong. I mean, there's a degree to which globalization screwed over a whole group of people. And there's nothing to be said other than we should work towards figuring out how to support those people who were left behind.
Yeah. We had a great episode with Sherrod Brown and Connie Schultz, who both, you probably know, is a senator, and she's a journalist.
Sure,
she's
sure.
Absolutely amazing person. They both grew up in small towns in Ohio. And like we were pressing them really hard on that point, which is, the Democrats, Sherrod is an exception, but the Democrats have become very much of a party that doesn't understand, you know, once unions, I think, went away, doesn't understand what life is like in those towns, writes them off. And, you know, it is a problem for the Democrats. But It is funny.
Well, go ahead.
No, please.
I was going to say the number one thing that when I was touring the country in 16 and Trump was getting traction and I would go to, you know, Bloomington, Indiana, or, you know, Champaign, Illinois, or any of these towns in the Midwest, you know, San Antonio, Texas, wherever it was. And I would say to people, you know, if they were Trump supporters, I'd go, what do you like about him? Nine out of 10, he speaks his mind. He's not politically correct. And I think that that's, to me, that's where liberals are going to have to look in the mirror at some point and be honest about the idea of discourse. Because people on the right, they'll say anything. And those things are often bananas. But there is a more free-flowing discourse, and people on the left are more guarded and they're more cautious with how they speak.
Yeah, it's a great insight. You know, there is an intolerance for listening to the other side that both sides are guilty of, and nobody likes to be judged and called stupid. And so I was talking to someone in the Biden team last week about this, which is, all of the things that people criticize Trump for, his supporters go, yeah, that's why we like him.
Yeah.
Right? It's like you think, it's like he tears down the FDA, he tears down the CDC, and they go, yeah, he's tearing down a bunch of bureaucratic pinheads.
Yeah.
And that's what he's there to do. He's here to knock stuff over. And so I think we're, none of us are good. I mean, one of the things you'll learn in the show, this, in the bubble shows, we are kind of in our own bubbles.
Yeah,
we do kind of see the world very much the way we want to see it. I interact with people like you on Twitter. I don't interact with people who disagree with me very much on Twitter because it would be painful.
Yeah, and it'd also be endless.
Yes, it'd be endless. And so you try to say you're open-minded, but you know, I'm 53. As you said, I'm going to die in a few years. I mean, I'm done. I got no more.
Well, yeah, it's one of the jokes from my new show is I'm 42. I'm exactly halfway through my life. Not technically. Not everyone dies at 84, but no one's ever like 80 through 100. Those are the years. They're like, I was 83. I reached for a grape and I never walked again. And then the other joke I have is, you can relate to this as well, is I'm middle-aged. You're middle-aged, right? What, 53, you said?
Sure. 53.
Middle-aged. And the expression for middle-aged, they go, you're over the hill. And I never understood that expression till I got on the hill and I looked around and I was like, oh, there's natural causes. They're not close, but they're coming. You can probably see that though, right? Isn't that a weird thing about middle age? You start to see natural causes and go, oh yeah, there they are.
They're there. That's so funny. Don't go anywhere. We've got to go earn some money to donate to charity.
Can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media Network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts, behind-the-scenes segments, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through all of our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, one of the things about you that I've always loved is you invented relatable.
That is not true. That is completely not true, but I'll accept a compliment.
My son, my oldest son, who hopefully listens to this, is 22 and loves your comedian. He loves your comedians, like, loves comedians. But he's always like, he finds the thing. He'll DM me or text me or tweet me and say, just like relatable. Like that's the ultimate compliment. And you've done just an amazing job of when you start talking, even though I don't even know where you're going. And you know what this joke's going to be, don't know where, but it's already like, I'm already find myself nodding my head going, that's so relatable. And like, you could about say, but you'd be about to say the most unrelatable thing, but you sound very relatable and you make people feel like there's a barrier that's down between you and them. More than most any comic, it feels like there's no barrier. Like, it's like, wow, this, I'm in his head and he's in mine. It's pretty amazing.
Here's the goal. I appreciate the compliment. The goal is, much like the goal of an epidemiologist, the goal of the comedian is to, I'm not going to be able to land this.
That was a joke gone south.
The goal is always to connect with people, right? So the best way in my experience is 22 years as a comedian is to let down your guard entirely and essentially just, you know, say, here's what I got, you know, and warts and all, here are my flaws, here's the crazy thing I was thinking about, and that's sort of all there is, I think, in comedy is just opening up to people in some ways.
Is that hard to do?
I think it takes a long time. I mean, they always say, you know, Seinfeld always says that like it takes 10 years to become yourself on stage. Like it's so hard to actually, I think this is maybe true of other things too, you know, like is that it takes years and years of doing a thing and essentially pretending to be someone else. So early in my career, I was pretending to be, you know, Stephen Wright or Bill Cosby or Mitch Hedberg or whoever it was. And then at a certain point, you pretend to be them, and then you start to become yourself. And becoming yourself is hard to do because we're all ashamed of ourselves and we're embarrassed of ourselves and all this stuff. At a certain point, you sort of start to own who you are.
Right. Natural causes, right?
It's just do you find that with the epidemiology? Do you find like, I mean, not literally, but do you find that it's like it took you a long time to be confident in your own insights?
Actually, what you said was completely unrelatable. No, I'm kidding. No, I actually think it is the journey, and the best part of life is that one good part is you start to feel like you're at an age where you can be you. And actually, that I'll be honest with you, that's like when I met my wife, Lana, that's how I knew it was right, because like every other woman I dated, I was trying to be something.
Yeah.
Present something.
Yeah.
And with her, like we both felt instantly this thing, like it's like, well, we're just us. And like it was just the strangest thing. And I definitely feel like that doesn't happen automatically in any job. You come in and you try to present yourself as something because you want something. And or you want to be a certain way, or you don't like certain elements of how you do things. And so you try to clean that up. And it's not all unhealthy. Some of it's healthy process of improvement. But if you do that for long enough, right, and then you're like, wait a minute, I want to get back to the essential. How do I do that? And when you finally do, and I feel like I do on this podcast for the 10 people who listen to this, they get that. They're all relatives of mine, by the way. So you're going to be very popular with my family. No, but with this, I'm really privileged to be able to do this, and I do. So I think you're dead on. Tell us about some of the work that you're doing before we go.
I'll tell you a couple jokes in my notebook that are unformed, because the people should know that my podcast is called Working It Out, and I work out jokes with other comedians. There's a few things I've done during the shutdown, and one of them, the first thing I did was a thing called Tip Your Waitstaff, where we raised money. We put up a website, tipyourwaitstaff.com. We had all these GoFundMes for different comedy club waitstaffs across the country. And it would be Instagram lives between me and Sarah Silverman or John Mulaney or whoever. And Roy Wood Jr. did it with me. And we raised, over $500,000 for waitstaffs, which felt very good. And then it pivoted into in June, when I thought we'd all be back in business, by the way. I literally thought this whole thing just keeps going and going. It's like a never-ending nightmare. But
right.
I pivoted into this Working It Out podcast, which we give money to a nonprofit every week that's chosen by the guest, and we work out new jokes. So anyway, I thought to give the audience a taste of what a new joke looks like, I wrote this week. I think you should just cut this out if it's not funny. If you don't think this is funny, we should just literally cut it out because it'll seem really stupid. But I wrote this week. I think we throw around the term pre-existing too freely. The word itself is an existential conundrum because, for example, we don't know when the cancer formed. It could have been years ago or yesterday. I mean, when I go to a doctor and the lady at the desk asks me if I have a pre-existing condition, I want to be like, my whole life is a pre-existing condition. Like, is this a pre-existing conversation? Is this a pre-existing pen? Can I pay with pre-existing money? I actually have a lot of pre-existing jokes about pre-existing conditions. Those are jokes that existed before now. Pre-existings are like a chicken versus egg type of thing because all conditions are pre-existing until you know about them and then they're existing. And then the final thing I wrote, in some ways it's hopeful to have a pre-existing condition because a post-existing condition is death.
Okay, so what you do on your show, if I get it right, is you then go through the working it out of that joke.
Yeah, we talk through like what the incarnation of the joke and like what could we do to make that better.
Right. So here you go. So first of all, any joke where you're laughing in the middle of telling it is good.
Like, okay.
Though no, it's true. That's true. Like it's a good because your laugh is so natural. It's good. The word cancer.
Yeah.
Kind of ends the joke.
Yeah, except that I had cancer, so I talk about it quite a bit.
Right.
I had a bladder tumor when I was 19.
But in the middle of the joke, when you get to cancer, unless you're like, I don't know.
Yes. It needs context.
You're like, because at that point, I'm like, oh, it's a kind of a buzzkill word.
So I think that what it would have to be, based on what you're saying, and this is helpful, is it would have to be, it would have to go like this. It would have to go, I had cancer when I was 19. So whenever I go to the doctor, I fill out forms and they say, do you have a pre-existing condition? I think we throw around the term pre-existing a little too freely because the whole word is just this existential conundrum. We don't know when the cancer formed. It could have been years ago or yesterday. So when my doctor asked, blah, 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 I want to be like, everything is a pre-existing. So I think that that's what it is.
That's good.
We just need to be inside the cancer. I get your note. We need to be inside the cancer before we go there.
Yeah. I think that worked. You did it.
And then I'll give you one more.
Okay, give us another one.
you can relate to this. You have children. My wife and I have this problem parenting because these other kids, they're morons, and our daughter is a genius, and it's a problem because she's also more thoughtful. And another problem is that we're also geniuses, which makes us hard to explain it to the other parents because they're morons also. And then the free association from there, a lot of these things, what happens is, and I'll show you, I do it on my Evernote. I just write these things in my Evernote. And what happens is I'll write down like a line like joke colon our daughter is a genius, and then I'll just be like, why don't I free associate on that? And then the other day I was like, oh, I think the joke is my daughter's a genius, which is this tropey thing that everybody says, and then to be like, but the problem with that is that we're also geniuses, you know, so it sort of turns it the other way.
I like that.
Yeah, it's fun. Good.
Yeah,
it's fun and quick. And then the continuation, this is just a free write, but I go, she wants to be an archaeologist, my daughter, she's 5. But I have to keep explaining to her that the money is garbage in archaeology. And then she says she wants to be a teacher. And I'm like, oh, the unions are brutal. And she says she wants to be a veterinarian. And I say 90% of it's euthanizing cats. And then she moved away permanently. So we no longer live in the same home. So that's sort of a goofy one.
That is great.
Andy, I found your weakness. Your weakness is jokes about kids.
It was a sucker for it because you were talking to her and saying the most like adult cynical things that you say, and she's 5. and I thought that was brilliant. And now her name is Una, is that right?
That's right. And the whole thing about Una is everyone thinks that she's still 1 year old because in the show she's 1 year old, but the age is the thing, as you know. And she's five and she's at this age where everything she says is adorable. Like the other day I said, Mom's going to put you to bed. And she says, she's not your mom. She's my mom. And I said, that's what my therapist keeps telling me. Because all toddlers have a Boston accent. They're like, I'm tired. And Boston toddlers are like, I'm wicked tired.
What if you changed her name every birthday?
That's funny. Una. That's a good premise. It's a duo. Duo and trio.
That's not your name anymore, honey. Sorry. That was your name last year.
That's good. Yeah, so anyway, that's the gist of what my podcast is. And it's and by the way, it's pandemic produced. It's literally this thing that wouldn't exist if we weren't shut indoors.
Well, it's a great show. You do, as you said, give the money away like we do on our show. Also, we try to figure out the theme of the show. Why did we have you on? How do we relate it to the pandemic? I think we kind of nailed that. But the truth is, like you said something at the end, which I hadn't thought about just recently, which is like we wouldn't get to do this.
Yeah, that's true.
Like if it wasn't for the pandemic, you'd be on the road.
I'd be on the road, you know, out there with the book and you'd be doing science stuff.
I don't do science stuff. I'd never do science. But we would never get to hear you. Let's forget me. We would never get to hear you.
What would you be doing if it weren't the pandemic? What would you be doing?
What would I be doing if it wasn't a pandemic? Well, you know, Lana is very involved in local politics. So we would have been, I'm guessing we would have been, if you know, at this very moment, what would we do? We might have been knocking on doors. We might have been knocking on doors for the local and national candidates.
Well, good for you. I mean, on behalf of my wife, Jen, and I, we listen to the podcast. We follow you on Twitter. We really appreciate the service you're doing for all of the people that are following you because there are still some of us out there who believe in facts and data and believe in that there are people like you still doing the right thing.
That's kind of you to say. And it's mutual. I think you're helping a lot of people get through this. You're bringing us the normalcy we need. And I know that sounds like it's not a high compliment, but it is such a need right now for people to feel like nothing worse than if you're like, I can't be funny. Right in this climate, I can't be funny. That's scary.
Yeah, yeah, it is scary. Yeah.
All right, Mike, did we get it right?
I think we nailed it. I think we nailed it. You know why? We didn't force the comedy. The comedy sprinkled in. There's moments of levity. There's moments of seriousness. But it was like a real conversation. If you and I were having coffee, that's what it would be like. And let us know about those saliva tests, because man, could we use those saliva tests?
We'll black market you some saliva tests.
Awesome.
Okay. Thanks to Mike. I hope nobody got offended by any of the humor on the show. We let our guard down a little bit. If you want to listen to the full edition of this conversation with Mike Birbiglia, you'll be able to find it on Lemonada Media website. We'll do a full Patreon readout. It was a very interesting conversation, but unfortunately, it was a little long to put everything on here for y'all to listen to. Let me tell you about the upcoming episodes. Next week, we are getting back to the rigorous content of our times. On Monday, we have our toolkit episode on long haulers. These are people with chronic COVID symptoms and conditions with two great people. Next Wednesday, a very topical conversation with two former FDA commissioners, Rob Califf, who is the commissioner who served alongside of me when he was in the Obama administration, and Mark McClellan, who you've heard on here before, who was in the Bush administration. And then the following week, we're going to do a really interesting toolkit on testing and what's happening with testing in this country. Have a great rest of the week. I'll let you go from here. Thanks. Bye. Thanks for listening to In the Bubble. Hope you rate us highly. We're a production of Lemonada Media. Chrissy Pease is our producer. Ivan Kuriev is our editor. Jessica Cordova Kramer and Stephanie Whittleswax executive produce the show and run our lives. Our theme was composed by Dan Malad and Oliver Hill, with additional music by Ivan Kuriev. You can find out more about our show on social media at Lemonada Media, and you can find me at A. Slavitt on Twitter or at Andy Slavitt on Instagram. If you liked what you heard today, please tell your friends to come listen, but tell them at a distance. And for now, stay safe, share some joy, and we will get through this together. And hashtag stay home.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Last Day from Lemonada Media explores the moments that change us. Those times where you look back and say, whoa, one day I was myself and the next I wasn't. I'm Stephanie Whittles-Wax, and I have seen time and time again how sharing these stories can change lives. So, do you have a moment in your life that changed you fundamentally and forever? What happened? How did you move through it? And how did you eventually start again? If you'd like to share your story, go to bit.ly/lastdaystories, bit.ly/lastdaystories. We can't wait to hear from you.